Counsel, good morning. This is the case of State versus Quinn. As you can see, five of the members of the court are here in the courtroom on WebEx. We have Justice Nora Lerman and Justice Funk. Please, when you are not arguing, keep your masks on. When you are arguing, please take your masks or mask off so that we can hear and understand what you have to say. Do you have any questions before we begin? Thank you very much. Ms. Flynn, good morning to you. You may approach and you may proceed.
May it please the court, I am Stephanie Flynn and I'm representing Miranda M. Collins. Ms. Collins pled guilty or no contest to an amended information. The original information alleged a felony operating motor vehicle to avoid arrest. The plea to guilty of the amended information was a motor vehicle to avoid arrest, a class one misdemeanor, and obstructing a peace officer, also a class one misdemeanor. Ms. Collins was sentenced to a $750 fine on count one, along with a one-year license revocation. On count two, she was sentenced to a $250 fine. She was also ordered to pay court costs. The court the execution of the fine was suspended until June 3rd, 2019, and the court ordered that her bond be applied to the cost and fines. On appeal, Ms. Collins was represented by Ms. Mejia, and she alleged three different errors. First, that the district court erred in affirming the county court sentence, that the district court erred and abused its discretion in affirming the application of the bond to the fines and costs, and that trial counsel, Mr. Niehaus, was ineffective and he failed to present sufficient information for the court to determine a fair sentence. In regards to the district court erring and affirming the sentence, the appellee alleged that Ms. Collins is only appealing the license revocation. That's not accurate. She's appealing everything. However, the license revocation is what the majority of the brief and the reply brief did focus on. The sentence needs to fit the offender. In this particular case, the sentence did not fit Ms. Collins. Ms. Collins was entering into drug court, and the trial court indicated that she would not be an appropriate candidate for probation based on the pending possession charge that she was entering into drug court for. There were no aggravating factors that would suggest a one-year license revocation was appropriate. After the sentence was—
Is that required to have aggravating factors before the imposition of the driver suspension?
There's not, pursuant to statute, although it is a factor for the court to consider. And in this case, there were no aggravating factors for that one-year license revocation. After the sentence was handed down, there were various motions filed by trial counsel. One was for a new trial. One was to reconsider the sentence. Both of those were denied by the trial court. However, based on those filings and the affidavit in support of those filings, the trial court became aware of other factors related to Ms. Collins that would be appropriate for the court to consider when determining whether the license revocation and the fine was appropriate, specifically that Ms. Collins is a single mother, that she was attending school in Omaha, and that she also had to drive her kids to school, and she had no family or friends that could help her with that.
Was there anything about the sentence as initially pronounced that made that sentence void?
There's nothing that specifically made it void. However, the court did not have all of the information. Trial counsel should have informed the court of all of that information that he attempted to inform the court when he went back on the motion for a new trial and the motion to reconsider. The affidavit filed by
in
trial
connection,
counsel.
I beg your pardon. In connection with the so-called new trial or reconsideration of the sentence, is this correct that the trial lawyer indicated that the lawyer wasn't fully informed about the conditions of the defendant's life, and if he had been, he might have argued differently at the sentencing? And I guess everybody was working towards a sentence that would permit her to have be eligible for drug court, right? And at the and then at this motion for reconsideration, the judge says, now I see she can't drive and do these things that might facilitate her rehabilitation, and said, I don't know that there's anything I can do once I've imposed the sentence. If I'd known some of these things beforehand, probably I would have likely ruled differently. So with respect to the sentencing, you are also raising an argument about ineffective counsel. How did these facts factor in? Was the lawyer deficient? Was she prejudiced? Or is this all subject to just abuse analysis?
We did also allege ineffective assistance. That was the third error that was alleged. According to the affidavit filed by trial counsel indicated he was not aware of all of the factors that he later presented after he filed the additional motions. However, there's no indication from the record that my client, Ms. Collins, was aware of any of the content of the affidavit. She never made a statement. So beyond trial counsel's information in the affidavit that was filed with the court, there's no indication that my client did not inform trial counsel of those factors. Even if trial counsel was not informed of those factors, trial counsel should have made an effort to find out more about Ms. Collins prior to going to sentencing. Based on that, we are alleging that there was ineffective assistance of counsel. So we're alleging both abuse of discretion, but also ineffective assistance of counsel, in that trial counsel did not fully gain the information he should have prior to sentencing.
Was your client in custody?
She was not in custody at the time, Your Honor.
So how does ineffective assistance of counsel get into this at all?
We believe that she was prejudiced based on the sentence, primarily the license revocation. It's going to have a significant impact on her in the future. Right now, it's stayed pending appeal. However, if she does not complete drug court prior to the stay being lifted, then she's going to have a difficult time attending all of her appointments for drug court, in addition to the other factors I mentioned earlier as far as getting her children to school and making it to school for herself.
So what do we know? Is she in drug court now?
She is in drug court at this time. She indicates to me that at this point in time, she's scheduled to graduate from drug court on October 26th of this year, so approximately a month.
And during this time period, has her license, driver's license, been revoked, or was it postponed subject to this appeal?
It's been postponed subject to this appeal, Your Honor. That way, she's still been able to drive, so she's still been able to get her children to school at this time. But she has reiterated to me that should this sentence move forward after the appeal, then she will have a very difficult time meeting her obligations. She's informed me that Uber or similar matters of transportation would not be available to her due to the cost, and a bus would not be available based on the schedules. She wouldn't be able to get to everywhere that she would need to go. The second error alleged is that the application of the bond to the fines and costs was inappropriate. There's been some various statute changes. There's also a statute change that's scheduled to go into effect November 14th, 2020, based on LB 881. The changes that were made to Nebraska Revised Statute 29901 and 292206, based on LB 881, still do not resolve this matter. 29901 indicates that the bond should be given back to the defendant once they have fulfilled their compliance with all orders to appear, which Ms. Collins did. 2206 states that the court has the ability to take the fines and costs from the bond. However, effective November 14th, 2020, that will no longer be applicable. The court can only subtract the costs, and the fines would only be able to be subtracted with permission of the offender.
Which, is this a case of last impression under 292263?
I'm sorry, Your Honor, was what a case of last impression?
Is this a case of last impression? In other words, if at the time all these finances were going on, if the law permitted the deduction of fines and costs, but now it only allows for fines with the consent of the defendant. At the time, was this proper? And if so, is this a case of last impression?
I do not believe it was proper based on the fact that 29901 still clearly indicated, even at the time of sentencing, that all of the bond money minus 10% was to be returned to the defendant. The 10% was to be used towards the clerk cost for the appearance bond. 29901 and 29-2206 were in direct conflict with one another, and they continue to remain so today, even when the change goes into effect in November of 2020. I request to, pending any further questions, reserve the rest of my time for
rebuttal. You're arguing that they're in direct conflict, so is this an argument for implied repeal? Or what do we do then if they're in direct conflict?
Yes, Your Honor, applied repeal. At this point in time, they still remain in conflict. It's better for my client once the change goes into effect in November of 2020, although there's no indication that would be retroactive. I know that there's case law that indicates that the legislature knows what they're doing when they modify statutes. However, both 29901 and 29-2206 were modified in LB 881, and they still remain in conflict, even in November 2020.
Couldn't they be harmonized to say that 29901 is a general rule and 29-2206 is an exception to that general rule?
I believe it's the other way around, actually, Your Honor. 29901 is very clear that the court shall refund the money. 2206 indicates that the court may apply the bond towards the fines and cost.
Yeah, when would 29-2206 ever apply under your understanding?
Under my understanding, it shouldn't at this point in time.
You're rendering it superfluous.
I understand, Your Honor, yes.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Ms. Klein, good morning to you.
Good morning.
May it please the court, Mr. Chief Justice. I'm Kimberly Klein, Assistant Attorney General representing the state in this matter. And as with respect to the license revocation, a license revocation is inconvenient for everyone who has their license revoked. That's kind of the whole point, is to impress upon you that it is, in fact, a privilege and that you can abuse that privilege such that it will be lost. And the district court, while it had the option to revoke or not revoke her license, made it very clear that it was choosing to revoke her license when it said, I'm going to revoke your driving privileges. It didn't say, I have to revoke your license. It says, I'm going to. So it obviously was fully well aware that under the statutes, it was an option and it chose to exercise that option. And I don't think it was an abuse of discretion, and neither, frankly, did the district court, who found that the sentence imposed was, I think its words were certainly appropriate and, frankly, lenient for the offenses involved in this case. It was an option that the county court chose to exercise. It was not an abuse of discretion to do so. As Justice Castle noted, ineffective assistance of counsel, since Collins was never ordered incarcerated, is frankly a non-starter in this case. Post-conviction, where ineffective assistance of counsel typically arises, requires custody, and custody by this court has been interpreted as someone who is in custody, on parole, or on probation. She is none of these. So ineffective assistance.
The comment was made by the trial court, probably incorrectly, that if there was some issue with respect to sentencing, she could take it up, right, post-conviction, which would not be available because she's not in custody. Is that right?
That's correct, Your Honor.
Okay, so that ineffective assistance of counsel based on post-conviction action, probably not available. But does that mean that there's no plausible argument for ineffective assistance of counsel on direct appeal?
The argument can be made, I think, as is usually the case, though the record is insufficient to resolve the ineffective assistance of counsel claims, which, given the sentence imposed in this case, basically effectively puts an end to the argument, because there is no post-conviction to be had under these circumstances.
I'm a little confused. So if this is a direct appeal with ineffective assistance of counsel, and the lawyer says, I didn't know all that stuff when I did the deal. And then the judge says, gee, I didn't know all that stuff when I did the sentence. I might have done something differently. Do we have a deficiency? And do we have a prejudice on that record?
Deficiency, I don't know, because I don't know if the defendant didn't volunteer the information or if the attorney didn't ask for it. It seems to me that's a distinction to be made under these circumstances. Nobody made a peep at the time the sentence was imposed on this thing. And it wasn't until the next day when I suspect Collins got a hold of her attorney and said, hey, look, you need to know some things, and then explained her situation to him more thoroughly. As I read the record, I get an overarching sense that Collins was completely focused on getting into drug court, and this was just kind of a little minutia detail annoyance to her, and suddenly it turned around that it wasn't such a minutia detailed thing after all. And then
she
all
avoided,
of a sudden,
I beg your pardon, she avoided incarceration or probation and things that might have been antithetical to drug court. Is that it?
Yes, absolutely.
In this deal, okay.
Correct.
Was this also originally filed as a felony?
It was originally filed as a felony, yes. And pursuant apparently to plea negotiations, it was amended to a two misdemeanors.
And imposition of fines.
And imposition of fines. Seems to me that that is a pretty fair bargain for the defendant under these circumstances. With respect to the return...
Well, just hypothetically, if this court decided that a license revocation was a bad thing and it should not have been done, what options does this court have? Where do we go in the law to say, you know, if we were the trial court, we wouldn't have done this?
You'd have to find it an abuse of discretion. And under these circumstances, I think that would be a tough road to hoe, to be perfectly honest. It's part and parcel of the sentence to be imposed. So it seems to me that if you decide that this was, in fact, an abuse of discretion, the best course would be to remand it back for essentially imposition of a new sentence minus the license revocation.
So we are led to believe that the license revocation has not been enforced during the pendency of the appeal. Is that your understanding?
That was my understanding from argument, yeah.
Thank you.
If we were to find that the assistance of counsel was ineffective, do we return it to the county court to reinstate the charges and start over again?
That would be my understanding. If counsel has been found to be ineffective, basically everything is undone and it all goes back to square one.
Back to the felony.
Back to the felony, yes.
And potentially back to the felony.
Potentially back to the felony, yeah.
Well, does the claim of ineffective assistance of counsel go to the plea agreement, go to the acceptance of the plea, or go to the sentencing? And does it matter in our analysis?
I don't know that it really matters. As I understand it, it goes essentially to the sentencing aspects. That my understanding of the claims is that counsel didn't adequately explain her circumstances to the court at the time of sentencing. And as I understand and I read the affidavit from counsel, he didn't explain it because he didn't know it. And I'm not sure, again, whose fault that is. And that would be something I think that would have to be explored, which, because of the circumstances of this, can't be, because post-conviction isn't available. As I said earlier, I don't believe that claim of ineffective assistance can be resolved on the record we have, and because of the sentence imposed, that puts an end to the claim. Briefly, with respect to the bond issue, this is not the first time, and I suspect it won't be the last time, that the legislature has slapped statute on the books without considering what else it affects. But I think Your Honor is exactly right. It is a narrow exception to a general rule. The statute makes clear that the court may deduct fines or costs from the bond posted by the defendant. And that's an exception to the general rule that 90% of it needs to be returned to them. I understand that the statute has been amended, so it is radically different than it is now, but this is what was in effect at the time that Collins' case was ongoing. And the county court did exactly what the statutes permitted it to do, and that's to simply take out fines and costs from the bond that was posted.
The revision is not yet effective.
Correct.
So sort of depends, doesn't it, as to when our opinion comes out about this issue.
Well, I would think the operative time, or the operative time frame, would be the circumstances at the time that this all occurred.
Isn't this a procedural statute? Like, is
yeah.
it substantive statute or procedural?
Oh, I think it's probably more, it's probably procedural.
And there aren't procedural statutes generally retroactive. I mean, they decide that the proceeding's not done until the direct appeal is
right.
concluded. And it's not
right.
concluded, it's still
That's
here.
True. Yeah, that's true.
It won't be concluded until our mandate issues.
That's true.
So doesn't that depend? It does. How soon our opinion goes out is the how this resolves?
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, I suppose it does. And I would respectfully ask this court to rather quickly issue an opinion.
Does that bring into question whether she consented or not to the allowing that might be taken out of her bond when there was no objection made at the time of hearing?
If we go past the effective date of the new statute, that would be an issue. And I, as you point out, there was no objection. There was no objection made to any portion of the sentence at the time the sentence was imposed. So I don't know if we would want to start walking down the road of basically implied consent on this sort of thing, or if we'd need to kick it back for hearings, or where we would be at that point in time.
Does it matter that the money has already been taken from her and that would require reimbursement?
Well, if this court orders that it be done, I imagine they're going to have to cobble together some sort of procedure by which it can be done. I'm not aware that there exists one right now. And in fact, the lower court said money's already been removed and allocated. There's nothing I can do about it. I imagine they'd have to put together something if this court determines that the bond money should be returned. But as of right now, to the best of my knowledge, there's no procedure by which that can be done.
Can you refresh my recollection on the dates? I beg your pardon, on LB 881, it was approved by the governor on August 7th of 2020.
I believe that's right, and which would make its effective date, 90 days down the road, I think it is, so early November sometime, if I'm counting right.
Thank you.
I see my time is up. If there are no further questions, we would ask that the judgment of the district court be affirmed. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Do we have time
Thank you.
For rebuttal?
No,
there is no time for rebuttal. Thank you, counsel, very much. When you leave the courtroom, please continue to observe your social distancing and your masking. Thank you very much. And please leave by the side door here. We will then go on to the next case of the day, which is Edwards versus Douglas County.